I'm Gina Kaufman, and you're listening to KCUR's Central Standard. If you want to weigh in on the discussion we were just having before the break about the demolition of the Royale Inn at Independence and Paseo, our Twitter feed is wide open, and there's a lively conversation going on there. We're at KCUR CST. Now we're switching gears to talk about something that happened in this city 50 years ago that arguably laid the groundwork for the national gay rights movement as we know it. Stuart Hines can tell us more. Hi, Stuart.
Good morning.
What is it exactly that happened in Kansas City 50 years ago?
It was the first ever gathering of gay and lesbian civil rights leaders from different organizations across the country. They met here in Kansas City at the State Hotel on the northeast corner of 12th and Wyandotte.
Who was involved? I mean, set the scene for me, because I don't even know who the players would have been.
Many people don't. This was a gathering of really people who became the pillars of the early gay and lesbian civil rights movement. There were about 15 organizations represented, mostly from the East and West Coast, and there were about 40 people in attendance. People like Barbara Gettings and Frank Kameny and Hal Call, who was from Kansas City, and Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, founders of some of these organizations who we now study.
So why was this meeting in Kansas City?
The meeting was in Kansas City because Hal Call had been here. He'd gotten a journalism degree in Columbia, and he'd worked for the Kansas City Star. And he eventually relocated to San Francisco. And so the contingents were largely West Coast and East Coast, and Hal suggested that they meet in the middle in Kansas City, and that's exactly what happened.
Tell me more about him. What was his role in all of this?
He was affiliated. He had a leadership role in the Mattachine Society, which was really a more conservative kind of organization with regard to what was called the homophile movement, and he helped produce its publication, the Mattachine Review. And he held that position for over a decade and a half.
When you say the homophile movement or the homophile organization, that language to today's ears seems a little unusual, maybe, or it's just not the way we're used to talking about gay rights.
It was a concerted effort on the part of these individuals to extract the sex out of homosexuality.
Oh, interesting.
And to emphasize an interest in, it's like a bibliophile or an anglophile. A homophile is someone who's interested in another person of the same sex.
So, I mean, why do you think this might seem like kind of an obvious question, but it is interesting to me that part of standing up for gay rights meant removing sex from gay rights?
It's interesting in that it points to the dichotomy in the early movement. There was a conservative wing that was really assimilationist, who argued that the only difference between gay and lesbian people and straight people was what they did in bed. Everything else was the same. And a more radical perspective on the part of other groups that put forth that gay people had a separate culture and a separate kind of experience, and therefore needed to be perhaps much more militant in their approach as opposed to assimilating into the culture at large.
This reminds me kind of, I mean, you referred to the leaders who were meeting 50 years ago. This was called the NACO meeting.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Kansas City, you referred to these leaders as the civil rights leaders of the gay rights movement. And in the civil rights movement that had to do predominantly with race, you hear about a similar kind of rift between people who believed, for example, in civil disobedience, working within the system, making allies, that kind of thing, and then another camp that wanted to fight the system altogether, that believed in a more sort of separationist kind of approach to getting equality and had maybe more of a by any means necessary kind of attitude. Do you see that as a parallel?
Oh, absolutely. It's the exact same kind of parallel for a minority population and how to best infiltrate or become accepted by or accommodated by the larger population.
So during this meeting that took place here in Kansas City, was this division something that played out in that meeting, to your knowledge?
I think it came, it became apparent to the folks who were in attendance. This was the first time they'd ever gotten together in person. And of course, at this point, correspondence is largely by letter or telegram. And so they'd never really had the opportunity to get a sense of what these other folks were like.
They had not been chatting online?
No, they had not. So this really brought these differences to light and to a head. There's, in the minutes of the meeting, there's you see evidence of primarily folks from the East Coast really wanting to push some of these issues as part of the agenda of the conference, and the more conservative folks really pushing back against that and putting the kibosh on those efforts to get that kind of language and discussion as part of the conference agenda.
So are you saying that an East Coast, and you're saying East Coast versus more conservative, so am I right in assuming that by more that you're sort of geographically locating a more conservative wing of the gay rights movement as it stood at this very early stage?
On the West Coast, yeah. Mm-hmm. So it was really East Coast versus West Coast. And this opportunity to sort of start this loose confederation and this network of all of the 15 organizations that existed at that time really, like I say, brought those conflicts into clear perspective for everyone in attendance.
What were some of the main questions people were asking at this meeting, or the main problems they were hoping to, maybe not, you know, they're not going to solve these problems in the course of the meeting, but at least start chipping away at or having an agenda to tackle?
That's exactly what they wanted to do. They wanted to have a cohesive and comprehensive agenda that represented the views of all of these organizations. So they were looking at things like inability to serve in the military, the inability to become a federal employee. This is a time when gays and lesbians were actively fired from employment with the federal government. Job applications had the question, have you ever been or do you now have homosexual tendencies? Every application for a federal job had that question on it in 1966.
Wow.
They were looking at issues around the church, and they were also looking at issues with regard to the consensus of the psychiatric community that homosexuals were mentally ill.
That's a pretty large set of things to begin to tease apart and create an agenda for addressing. What would you say was the outcome of this meeting?
They were very ambitious, and what they did was they decided to hone in on a couple of specific areas. The armed forces issue was one of the tangible things that came out of the conference, in that they all agreed on Armed Forces Day in May of that same year to hold discussions or conferences around that issue. And then they divvied up some of these other topics among the various organizations, and each produced a pamphlet about that particular topic and then distributed it accordingly.
In the last year, gay marriage, or same-sex marriage as people often call it, has become, it's been such a huge change to see the Supreme Court ruling on that. And I'm struck by the fact that marriage doesn't come up as one of the things they were discussing at this meeting 50 years ago.
It was not on the radar at that point. It was just something that people could never, ever considered they could do. Even in my own lifetime, I never, ever thought I'd be able to get legally married. And so they were much more concerned about these things that affected their ability to fully participate as a citizen, like the military, like federal employment. So that's what they focused on initially.
When it comes to those decisions about, like, we're going to focus, for example, on the right to serve in the military issue, and that there had to be other issues that were kind of set aside or put on a back burner for the time being, can you bring to life maybe a discussion around one of those issues that, that people had to kind of come to terms with, we can't do this now?
Well, some of the issues that the more militant wing were looking at were things like homosexuals are just the same as heterosexuals. Homosexuals aren't sick. Homosexuals aren't perverted. And the conservative folks really didn't want that language in this initial documentation of this umbrella organization.
Why not?
That's not how they felt. They felt that they needed to secure the permission of leaders of authority, people in the church, in the psychiatric community, in the government. Once they got that acceptance, other acceptance would follow.
Why is it significant that this meeting happened 3 years before Stonewall, the now legendary uprising against a police raid on a gay club in New York City?
It's significant, again, because it's the first time they all ever came together, and they see the differences in their approaches, and those differences only magnify as time passes in the late 1960s. The more militant folks tend to get the upper hand, and they are aided, quite honestly, in fact, by a generational shift. Most of the folks in the conservative wing are older, and you start to see the presence of young students in these organizations pushing that same militant agenda, which results in Stonewall.
Looking back on this, I mean, we just have a moment, but what does it mean to you that this happened in Kansas City?
I am so proud that it happened in Kansas City, and I'm so proud that we're going to try and acknowledge this anniversary later this year.
Stuart Hines, Assistant Dean of Special Collections and Archives, with us from the Miller Nichols Library at UMKC. Thanks for sharing this piece of history with us.
It's a pleasure.
KCUR will have more on the 50th anniversary commemoration of the NACO meeting closer to those commemoration events set for October, but the anniversary is this month. Our time is up for today's show. To listen back to anything you've heard, go to kcur.org/centralstandard later today. Subscribe to our podcast while you're there. That's kcur.org/centralstandard. Tomorrow, get to know the children's bookstore owners who are making Kansas City a hub for the children's literature industry. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. Up to Date is next on KCUR. Don't miss it. We'll